Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interview show. I'm your host, Owen Casey Stevens, and with me today are...
Alexander Agunis.
And Vanessa Hoskins.
Alexander, you didn't say that the everybody gamer. You always say
that. Yeah, I'm playing around with it.
You totally threw me
off. Well, you threw me off, because usually I try to make fun of your title by coming up with my own title on the fly. So I couldn't do that today. It would have been weird and out of place.
I preempted you.
You did.
Sorry.
I want to say everyone in the world may be a little off at the moment, so we're no different. So today we're doing the... Starship Operations Manual Breakdown. This is the cool, hot new book for Starfinder. And we all have some direct relationships with this book. So we're not doing a review since we sort of are biased. The Starship Operations Manual was the very last project I was working on as an employee at Paizo. And I only managed to start it, so I was delighted to get it in my hands because I did not know what the final format was going to be. I didn't do the final developing or copy editing or the art order, most of that. And these two fine folks wrote big chunks of this book.
Yeah, big chunks that, I don't know, I think are pretty cool. I'm looking forward to geeking out with you, Alex, about it and all the cool stuff.
I'm so excited. This is like, I if you had asked me when I, right before I got this assignment, I would have said that Calm is the greatest thing that I'd ever done for Starfinder. And then this book came out and now I can't pick between them because they're both my babies. I can't. Don't make me Owen. Don't make or Vanessa.
They're both either. Your babies.
Okay. I won't require you to pick between your babies. Okay. And technically, although I'm not credited as an author, I wrote the original draft of the Super Colossal Starship rules. So writing of mine is in there as well, although it's been nicely polished and revised by wise, talented, experienced people long after I was gone. So we sort of want to take a dance through this book and tell people about it. This is obviously the big Starship book for Starfinder, and that is something that people have been asking for, I think, since 1 minute and 15 seconds after the core rulebook came out. there was a period in the middle there where they were asking about things like spell guns and mecha, and then immediately was, when will there be a whole bunch of Starship content? And
more
so
starships,
the game has been adding some more starships. And there has been some starship content. As I mentioned, the Super Colossal Starship rules were in a AP Back Matter article. I happen to write the adventure that they were with as well. And then the Character Operation Manual that we were just talking about as Calm also had some starship material in it. But John Compton's the development lead for this book, and it both compiles the most important parts of that material in one place. So, for example, if you're wanting to know what are all of these starship roles and what are all the actions they can take, that information is all in this book, so you don't have to go dancing between the core rule book and the Character Operations Manual and the Starship Operations Manual to try and make sure you know what your character can do in starship combat. Mm-hmm. But there's also a bunch of great new content, starting with Chapter 1, Building Starships. You two have favorite parts of building starships?
I do. As a matter of fact, I'm going to pick something that's not my own first.
What?
I am a real... Yeah, I know. Because there's something in here that I'm really excited about. And I don't know if people haven't seen it or I'm just like unreasonably attached to this one idea in this book. But there's one thing that like is mine that I really like. And then there's one thing that I want to call out that's not mine. And the thing that's not mine, I think the interstellar travel section, the very first section you get to, is awesome. This is basically a section that is all about different ways that other people that don't use drift engines get around the galaxy. And some of the things are just like, they're like, wow, this is clearly how people traveled in starships before the drift engines were invented at the start of the Common Era. And then other things are like, why would you ever use this? Like, I think one of them is like this pain engine that takes you through the shadow plane. It's like a Kuthanite machine. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, and as you go through, you get assaulted by waves of pain. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, that's the shadow engine, which is just...
The shadow engine, which is used for the Church of Zonkuthon and Velstrax primarily. I presume it looks like the hyperdrive from Event Horizon with a big spinning ball full of spikes. That's what I assume it looks like.
See, I imagine something more like in The Princess Bride, the torture machine, but much more technologically advanced with several people hooked up to it. And it's like, we're just going to suck the life out of you to power this thing. And everyone's screaming in horrible pain as they're like, we only went to 5. Like, we never even went to 50.
You all have no idea how much more difficult this is going to be when we have a trip that's more than a couple of days.
I really appreciate the other thing. Good.
But
I was gonna say I really appreciate this section because in addition to being like a very technical, like this is how these things sort of work, like there's a lot of great story hooks into like why these things are no longer used. One of my favorites is actually the Fold Gate. It looks like one of those big like stargates from I don't remember if it was in Guardians of the Galaxy or what. I think it was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It was either that or it was in Avengers Endgame. But it's like basically a big portal that starships fly through. Maybe it was in Captain Marvel. It was in one of those movies. And like the starships fly through it and then they reappear somewhere else. And you're like, wow, that's a great technology. Why wouldn't we still use that? And then like you read the Fold Gate entry and it's like, oh, every time someone uses it, it literally rips and tears the planes and it causes like entire star systems to vanish. Mm-hmm. So it's like, oh, so like you could have a story where you're like, oh, I'm trying to get to system XYZ and you get there and there's just a hole. Like, oh no, this Fold Gate has ripped open a hole in the fabric of space time. And where is this place now? The whole star system is adrift. And I just think it's really cool how well this section blends mechanics and just storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. There's some great story hooks in there. The other thing I really like about Fold Gates is that they are left over from a previous culture and no one knows how to make them. And no one has mapped them all out and they are mostly in the vast. So you're sitting there as a GM going, oh, no one has mapped them all out? Well, so mm-hmm. if you're wanting to find some stars, especially if you say, hey, you find a new Fold Gate, and when you go through, there are 2 new Fold Gates. When you go through those, each of those has 2 new Fold Gates. That can be an entire campaign setup where you're hopping from system to system to system, trying to figure out who built these, where do they go, how's it connected, etc.
And yeah. Then you go back to Absalom Station with that 1d6 day drift beacon, and you find out that you accidentally made like Verses disappear because you used the Fold Gate and it just crossed in the wrong place. And now you have to deal with the repercussions of getting rid of an entire planet.
Why'd you have to get rid of that planet, though? Get rid of Yaxa.
You can also do the fun Lost in Space like plot lines by saying, hey, your jump went horribly wrong when you came out of the drift. Your drift engine is 100% slagged and melted and it will never work again. There is a Fold Gate in this system. So you either sit here forever or you go through the Fold Gate. Those are your choices.
Sure. You just got to keep going with the bad choices. You're locked in right now.
Exactly.
That's really funny. The reason I picked Verses, Vanessa, is because I'm currently playing in Signal of Screams with James, and book 2 takes place on Verses. That entire planet, I'm sure it's a really nice place, except for the very specific parts we're in, but that whole planet could get lost in the drift now. I've died twice in this adventure path. That is 2 times more than I died I was knocked unconscious a bunch in Dead Sons. I didn't die in Dead Sons. This adventure has murdered me twice. Pep, he was a wonderful Brunieri.
So moving on, the next section in building starships is starship weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And again, yes. This has a lot of stuff in it that people have been asking for since very, very early on. Anchoring weapons, for example, that allow you to hit something with a big space grappling hook and chain, and that can lead to boarding actions, automated weapons. There are deployed weapons, which can mean you can have a gun drone go out and shoot things.
Mm-hmm.
There's and some of the stuff on this reminds me of some of my favorite science fiction settings, which we'll get to more later. And then also things like orbital weapons, which are particularly nice. I, of course, am very fond of the spinal mount weapon, since the spinal mount weapon is a trope from some of my favorite science fiction, going all the way back to Star Blazers / Space Battleship Yamato, which to me is the original spinal weapon, which is exclusively for super colossal ships. But I also like there are things like intimidating weapons, mm-hmm. which is just if a starship hits another starship with an intimidating weapon, its captain gains a benefit.
Well, it's just these weapons that are just so scary. Like, you can imagine some of it's like, here's a powerful laser blast. You're like, yeah, sure, I've seen laser blasts, right? But some of them it's like, I don't want this thing hitting my ship. I'm actually afraid for what's going to happen to me personally. And I think that's just really a fun effect to put on a weapon.
Definitely. Vanessa and I have a lot of cards in this section because this is mm-hmm. one of the several sections that we both kind of like tag teamed on. Yeah. So
I think you wrote and melee, and I basically wrote everything else. There's obviously
I did orbital, melee, and spinal.
I should take three. A moment to sort of point out some of the history of this book that we may have glossed over at first. The original three authors on this book was Alex, myself, and Hillary Moon Murphy. And then, of course, you know, because Owen had to go from Paizo and all that, it got a new developer, and they added some more authors to sort of fill in the gaps and change a few things. So a few things have changed, and a few things are by some other authors. I don't want to discount their work on this, but the majority of this section was written by Alex and I, and there are some really great guns in here. I changed force fields into a weapon. That was kind of fun, just so you have that force field bumper car effect if you wanted to, of, you know, hey, let's just use our force field as a weapon, why not. Buster weapons was I think an Alex invention to destroy shields, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I just wanted a weapon that, so the history behind buster weapons is that we did I mentioned this in the Gen Con breakdown behind the pages with John. We did Dead Sons, and we gave our starship over to our party's mystic, who was like a mystic of Triune, and was like, I'm gonna make a starship. And he's like, I came back and I calculated the most efficient way to spend build points, and it's shields. And so he slaps down this starship that literally cannot die. Like, it's TALC, it's TL and AC are just too high. It's got too many shields. But the problem is he puts all of his points into these things, and we have one light weapon as our weapon. And that's it. And so we go into this starship combat. It was like in somewhere in book 3 or 4. And it's supposed to be simple. It's supposed to be fast. We're in this fight for 3 hours. James had to just call it. It's like, I'm not doing this anymore. And so like I sat down when we did this book, I was like, I don't want anyone to ever think this is a good idea ever again. And introducing buster weapons, bust those shields. GMs, if you ever have to deal with that, bust them.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fun thing with buster weapons is it's sort of an answer to the the Ripper weapons that mm-hmm. deal like almost no damage to shields but tons of damage to hull. And so if you've got a starship design, maybe with like one on your port side and one on your starboard, you can really like strategically maximize your effect to rip apart the opponent's shields and then destroy their hull, because both of those weapons are relatively more powerful than weapons that are equally good against shields and hull. So
I can also easily
can we take see a minute to talk
about, I can easily see someone building a squadron that has, you know, here are four ships and two of them have rippers and two of them have busters, and they work together for specific purposes.
Oh, absolutely, that would be a great squadron build when we get into squadron combat. Which, by the way, can I say is my favorite part of this entire book. So we're just going to skip ahead really quick to squadron combat because people have been asking for it and we're talking about it.
That's really far to skip.
You know what? I'm not the one who brought up squadron combat, so don't blame me.
But I wanted to talk about how cool your minds are.
All right, okay. We're going to get back to squadron combat in a bit. I do totally want to talk about how cool the minds are. I felt like when I was writing it, it was going to change sort of how starship combat happened. Because at least in a lot of the Starfinder Society games I was in, it was always try and maneuver so you can go right up their tailpipe every single time. And we were always just like, you know, exhaust pipe to nose in every single combat. And it got to the point where it's like, really? This is all we're doing? So I'm like, yeah, mines make you think twice about using that strategy.
Yep, no more Starship Centipede, that's for sure.
I also want to talk in addition to deployed weapons, there are pod weapons. Pod mm-hmm. weapons are basically bolted onto the outside of your starship instead of being mounted on the interior.
Oh, those are great.
And they've got their own power supply. The reason I call those out is that one of my favorite space opera book series is the Honor Harrington series. And the idea of deployed weapons plays very well with the growing technology and how different things work in that book series. And I also have to call out that there are ramming weapons, because when people asked about this book, some of their immediate questions were, can I ram people? Mm-hmm. Can I board people? And this section provides the yes answer to both of those.
I gotta write both the sections.
I want to call out the mystical weapon property specifically. Mystical weapons basically use your mysticism to fire instead of your piloting or base attack bonus. And mm-hmm. it's actually a pickup from Starfinder Society where it was a boon. And it's really nice to see, like, hey, there are mystics who want to shoot with these magical guns.
Yeah, cool. I think there was also a bestiary weapon in one of the bestiaries. It was one with a mystical property that got picked up there. So it was used in a couple different places very sparingly. But this definitely gives you more options for a mystical weapon, which I think is great. It's like, I'm just going to shoot my magic through this weapon and blast a hole with magic. Pew. It's the Black Mage
and
special.
And combined with, and we'll get to that section later as well, having a chief magic officer also means that mystics can do more mystic stuff mm-hmm. in Starship Combat instead of hoping that no one else has more ranks of piloting than they do.
Right.
Okay, that brings us to alternate armors. I love alternate armors for much the same reason that I love, and Alex mentioned he loved, the interstellar travel. I like looking at different technologies and how they operate. It really, to me, elevates the Starfinder galaxy to be able to say, hey, there's more than one way to avert harm. There's more than one way to travel throughout the galaxy. And so this system excites me because, again, you can have fights feel very, very different. The tactics you use, either against different kinds of armors or if you yourself have different kinds of armors, mm-hmm. are different, and that should help us avoid the everything feels exactly the same all the time problem that Vanessa was just mentioning.
Well, it also is neat because it changes between, like, do I want one big heavy hitting weapon or multiple shots with smaller hitting weapons? And depending on what they've got, you're really going to want to make an informed decision on that. For example, the deflector shields, which I am so happy I could put in there, you get more of a Star Trek style deflector shield. So the base game has very like Star Wars type, oh, all the shields are in the front and, you know, oh, we're losing them. And it's more of just this pool of hit points that they have to break through before they can finally damage you. And then it's just like, good night, crazy. Whereas deflector shields, you get that fun effect where if you get shot with something, it's probably going to do hull damage, but not nearly as much hull damage as if it hit you directly. And that's the fun part. It basically gives you DR against everything that comes and hits you, going all the way up to 20, which is quite expensive, mostly on the PCU. But what's neat about the deflector shields is every time you hit them, that DR value decreases, and certain weapons, like buster weapons, will overwhelm the shields and lower it even faster.
That is very Star Trek-y. I like it.
Yeah, it's really cool.
And we also have things like fortified hulls and reinforced bulkheads, things that just make sense that people would have those options. Mm-hmm. So now they're in there, and they and I love reinforced bulkheads, which give you fortification against critical hits, which, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a concept that exists in Starfinder. It makes perfect sense.
Yep.
It works very, very nicely with, oh, okay, this ship is this much tougher without it all being about having a higher armor class or a higher target lock or a higher number of points of damage.
And so, in terms of PCs building their own ships, reinforced bulkheads is one of those things that's a really great option when building your starship. If you don't really have a great engineer on hand or anyone that wants to fill that role, engineers are usually patching up all that critical damage and repairing it during the ship combat. With a reinforced bulkhead, you're going to take less critical damage and less of those penalties. So it's a great thing to pair when you don't really have anyone filling that role.
Okay, moving on to special materials. So one of the things I love about this book overall, and this section in particular, is that it really helps drive home that Starfinder is a science fantasy game. And so a lot of the fantasy tropes that you run into in Pathfinder and other fantasy games, like having things made out of adamantine or made out of mithril, or in this case, made out of a whole wild set of star metals, is here. And so we can do things like saying, hey, I've got a adamantine alloy gun mount, or I have horacalcum defensive countermeasures. Mm-hmm. And on top of it being interesting and developing new options and making sure that the starships can be more different and changing tactics, I just love the story of being able to say, I've got a highly radioactive bluish green obsidian metal on the outside of my power core, right? To me, that's just a fun story element, and it helps make things more interesting and define how the galaxy works.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of things like reinforced bulkheads that you're like, eh, but it doesn't add to the story, but it might help balance combat. And these are fantastic elements because they, as you said, do enhance the story. How cool is it when you're like, okay, so there's this pirate vessel and you defeat them and you board them to be like, all right, let's arrest these bozos. And you find this strange metal on their power core. Well, where did they get it? Did they steal it? Did they make it? Like, all of a sudden there's all these questions that it raises, and questions is what makes really good adventures.
Yes, definitely. I agree.
It's also great for the GM who wants to be able to pretty quickly and easily say, this planet has its starships, and its starships are different or special for some reason. Mm-hmm. So being able to say, hey, this one planet's a single planet empire, whatever, they have huge Noquil deposits, and so they put Noquil on everything. And you as players are going to have to deal with that when you run into them, but it will also let you recognize them. Oh, there's that green lightweight crystalline star metal all mm-hmm. over the outside of the starship. I immediately know that that might be related to these people.
Yeah, that's actually something that Kitsune, good old Dustin, Kitsune Warlock was asking in chat, is about the Noqual, which is you were just talking about, which deflects magic, increases your target lock and your armor class against magical attacks, but also the DC of mystic actions. It's a really fun, hey, we don't got no spellcasters anyway, sort of enhancement to your ship, just in case you happen to be going against, you know, the magic army of magic out there in space.
We're just going to take all this anti-magic metal and plaster it right on the ship. And like, there's art for it in the book. It's like bright green. It's amazing. It's like, great job.
Yeah, it's right there in that section. That's the one that's highlighted. And it just looks fantastic. Like, with the right ship, it looks so cool.
It makes me laugh because my first experience with Noqual was Thornkeep, where they specifically call it out as radioactive. I'm like, just smear that right all over that hull. You're fine. Your starship can handle cosmic rays. It's not a problem.
I mean, it's low-level radiation, which I'm sure Starship Hull can block pretty well. Otherwise, you couldn't be in space.
They carefully add that incorporating Noqual into starships is a delicate process.
That's amazing.
Absolutely.
Okay, moving on to starship systems.
Yeah. I love this section. This section's so cool.
I love the starship systems, and one of the reasons I love the starship systems is that in the expansion bays, we have both an arcane mortuary that allows you to help create undead, and corpse recycler that allows you to turn bodies into parts for necrographs.
Yeah.
I wrote a bunch of stuff about Eox. I did a bunch of Eoxian starships for my Empire of Bones adventure in the first Starfighter AP. So I just love the idea of being able to have people come on board. You're talking to them. There are some Eoxian diplomats, maybe. Oh, and you walk by a corpse recycler. A what? Oh, don't worry about it. We only use, you know, free-range corpses. It's not a problem. Don't be concerned. Dinner?
I mean, waste not, right? One of the fun things in here is the breaching pod. So this is essentially just a big missile that you can shoot at the other starship, but inside it is, you know, a squadron of soldiers or perhaps your own PCs. And if it hits the hull of the other ship, it can breach right through and allow you to spill into the other ship. A fun trope we've seen in a lot of sci-fi. Well, now you can do it with this breaching pod, which is super cool. Also, because it is a starship system and not a weapon, because it has a very specific purpose, right? It does deal some damage, but primarily it's there to get troops into that other ship.
Yes, very cool.
Very cool.
I particularly like breaching pods because they can transport up to two huge creatures. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to put troops in there, right? There's no rule about that. If if you have, say, radiation and life-eating giant creatures from Eox that you want to load two of them into your breaching pod and shoot it at someone else's starship, that's on our list of options.
I mean, that's going to give their security a bad day, that's for sure.
I think we all know that if Ryan was to play Starfinder and use this, he would just fill it up with monkeys and then call it his barrel of mad monkeys.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Again, are things in here that people have been asking about. The booster thruster housing allows you to basically have NOS for your starship if you need that boost of speed or maneuverability. There are cryo chambers. There's a lot of cool stuff with dedicated computer housings and similar purpose-built systems. Mm-hmm. External expansion bays, because in space, the problem is not space. If you're not going to go through an atmosphere, you don't have to be aerodynamic. You can bolt anything onto the outside of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Drop pods, ghost drives, which are super cool and make you insubstantial. Mm-hmm. You guys have any favorite stuff in here?
I kind of like the external expansion bays because it almost turns like your starship into a train of sorts. Like if you can imagine also just latching big cargo containers onto the back of it, even if you just use it for storage, and having this idea of like, oh no, we're space haulers. We just have basically a giant train in space that grabs all these cargo containers and drags them behind us until we get to our destination. I think that's kind of cool.
I am super biased because I wrote a lot of these. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. I wrote a good chunk of them. The one that I adore that I mentioned earlier is the training interface modules that was my baby in SOM, and I'm so happy to see that they made it a hardcover. So basically what they are is they're an advanced computer system that you put onto your starship, and when you put a TMI onto your ship, or TIM, I'm sorry, a TIM onto your ship, that you it's associated with a specific class feature or feat. And if you have that when you're operating a specific role on your starship gets benefits. Part of the idea is that it is a optional system that you can sort of buy into with your build points that lets your character's feats and class features matter more in starship combat. So baseline, you're kind of just your skill bonuses and not a whole lot else. Mm-hmm. In terms of what your character does in starship combat. But with TIMs, all of a sudden now, the fact that you are a mystic and you have healing touch and you can do things with healing touch as when you occupy the engineer role, like matter. And I am really excited to see what happens with this system as the game continues to grow and evolve. There was a point where like I was trying to write a TMI for like every single option for every single class. And I think I got to 7,000 words of the Envoy and I was like, no, I can't do this. And so I took all of those extra Envoy TIMs and I was like, later, just like that. The other thing that I really like, I had just finished watching Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans right around the time Owen asked me to do this. And I was like, Owen, I need to do something. And he was like, shoot. And I was like, all right, consciousness uplink drive. And so basically, if you have a data jack in the back of your neck, you can plug yourself into your starship. And it makes you really good at using your starship and maneuvering it and going around and whatnot. But if you take a critical effect, you might lose the ability to use parts of your body. So please be careful when you're using TIMs. They are very dangerous, but very fun.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite TIMs actually are the ones that are associated with feats, because they are the ones that are the most accessible, in my opinion, to people. We very carefully, when we were designing the core rulebook, did not want people to have to spend extensive resources for their character scale stuff to be good at starship scale stuff, which is why we don't have a large number of feats or an entire class dedicated to being good at starship stuff. But with the feats TIM system specifically, if your starship has far shot as one of those TIMs, then anyone who's in the gunner position can use that, and you can increase the weapon's range for 2 hexes if it has a range of at least 6 hexes. So rather than modifying your character to better work with your starship, we have this creates a system where your starship can be modified to better work with your characters. And that, to me, is the most interesting part of it.
From chat, Jaina B. asks, how many assembly oozes can fit in a breaching pod? The answer is 8.
Yeah.
That's a lot of random useless gear that you're littering the other starship with.
Yes.
Well, you're going to litter outer space with it when the oozes disassemble the enemy starship.
Oh, that's true. And you'll just have a cloud of helmets. Dom Hero LS13 asks, how many breach pods could a breach pod breach of a breach pod could breach pods? 1.
The funny thing is, she's 100% correct, right? Once I fire my breach pod to breach pod, then that breach pod has been expended to breach the breach pod. So one is, in fact, the rules as written correct answer.
Kitsune Warlock asks, can a breach pod breach another breach pod? No. All right, great. Moving on.
I also really appreciate that this book still has the two paragraphs that I wrote on the efficacy of having virtual intelligences pilot your starship. That's great stuff. I love that.
Yeah, that is a fantastic addition to this book, is the virtual intelligence and their upgrades. And how smart is this thing anyway? Are we dealing with a HAL 9000 situation? Or is it just like an over glorified Alexa? I said the word.
the virtual personality that we mentioned in the core rulebook is clearly a glorified digital helper, right? That's very specifically the case.
Yeah.
We then have the virtual intelligence, which is a step up and can do a good deal more stuff, but is still not sapient. It's not a true artificial intelligence. And then we've got a lovely little sidebar about true Starship AIs and the legal protections that they receive as people. Which it is important to me that we don't suggest that just because a person, that a true artificial intelligence is built, that it is any less valid than one that happens to have been born or hatched or grown out of a pile of ooze.
Yeah, that's just an extension of anti-android propaganda, and I won't hear of it.
Right.
Exactly.
I think it's important. And, you know, we sort of get to cheat in Starfinder because we specifically have souls. So we actually have a hard line, right? When is an artificial intelligence actually a person? When it is so complex that it generates or attracts a soul. There. That's done. Now, that doesn't mean that a person standing around on the Starship deck can tell necessarily. We don't have a detect soul spell all on purpose. But we do have a hard line within the game system. So your drone is a mechanic, not a person. You are not a slave driver. An android is a person, so owning them is evil.
Indeed.
Okay. That brings us to what is obviously my favorite section, the super colossal starship. And I believe we have a piece of art of a super colossal starship firing its spinor mount weapon that we can show people.
We do. So we have that section, and let me just pull that picture away. There we go. There's the art of a super colossal blasting another very large ship into two pieces.
It's a great piece of art. I am a fan of the supersized starship going all the way back to the pulps of the 1930s. And so when I had the opportunity to do The Empire of Bones, I really wanted that ship to be bigger than anything we had discussed before. So we created the super colossal category, and it's got two frames, spaceships and ultronauts. And that meant I needed to put the spinal mount super weapon in there, which takes a few rounds to charge up and does a stupid amount of damage and takes a number of rounds to cool down. And a lot of that is about wanting to pull up a feel from certain kinds of stories and ships. But one of the reasons, for instance, it takes a few rounds to charge is that you can then build the drama, right? Hey, you guys have to successfully get off the map before the super colossal starship A turns to face you because it's slow and pokey, and B charges its spinal mount weapon.
Yeah, that's probably why it's unfair that in Pact Worlds, I put a super colossal warship in there that also has a big grav gun on the front. So it can just hold you there while it charges up, and you're just like, I need to leave, but I can't.
And that's why every starship should now have a breaching pod with enough space in it for the crew, so that if your starship has been grappled by a super colossal ultronaut with a grappling weapon and a spinal mount, you can go somewhere else.
Yes.
Just leave.
Well, if you use the breaching pod, you can just get on their ship. Take it over, and now you have a super colossal starship with a grappling weapon and a spinal mount weapon.
That's great. And then the best part is
like, at least you have the bridge of such a ship.
You're like, this is too expensive. My players, this is a tier 20 ship, and they're only level 7. You turn the starship into a super dungeon and level them to 20, and they get the starship at the end.
That sounds fair.
Yeah, it's very fair. I think it's very fair.
This picture of this super colossal starship blasting the Eoxian fighters makes me smile, because when I wrote the spinal weapons, I was like, hey, Owen, this says you want really big guns on starships. What do you mean? Owen never told me what he mean. He just linked me a clip from that show he talked about, and he had me watch this anime shoot the spinal gun, and I'm like, okay. He's the second developer to ever do that to me. The first one was Wes Schneider, who told me to do the corruption that's in Psychic Anthology, and he made me watch the entire movie Akira in order to design that one.
At least mine was a nice short clip. But yeah,
yours was 20 seconds.
What I want for spinal mount weapons, then showing you any of about 24 clips from some version of Space Battleship Yamato is my immediate answer.
You showed me the one where it was like the first time they used it, where like they rammed the two ships together and the one blew up all the way. And I guess like from there, they were like, we could just keep doing this. Nobody could stop us. Like the rest of the plot is just them improving this weapon. But like that was the first one that I saw. I was like, oh, okay. They just realized they could turn the entire battery into a core. That makes sense. That's like a technomancer using that spell that makes the batteries explode like a fireball.
Isn't that the best?
All right, so we have lovingly lingered over super colossal ships long enough, although I probably could do a whole hour on the history of super colossal ships and spinal mount weapons and how they inspired certain parts of Starfinder. But let's move on to the second chapter of the book, Starship Combat.
Wait, we're only at chapter 2 and we're 40 minutes in? Holy cow.
Oh, God.
Well, there aren't a whole lot of chapters.
All right.
That's true.
I mean, it's
that's fair.
The chapters cover a lot of territory, but there are only 4 total chapters.
Ooh, Starship Combat. This is my favorite because it's got some really good stuff in there, including Squadron Combat.
I know. It's like we promised we'd get there, and we're here. Here we are in the future, and it's bright.
Well, first we have to talk about boarding, because that's next in the book.
We've sort of covered that there are options for boarding. They're talked about in greater detail here. I don't think, unless someone has something they really want to call out, I think we've sort of discussed them already.
Yes. Everyone loves boarding. And one of the fun design challenges in here is basically to make sure to write it not only so that it works with a lot of different types of boarding parties. So like injected pathogen is one of the examples of things that you could use to inject a biological agent and call that a boarding party. The term boarding party is used pretty loosely, but what's really fun is if you want to say, hey, I have this like squadron of, you know, stewards or something that's going to board their ship while we're in combat with it, you can shoot your breaching pod, have them board, and then basically resolve their effect on combat and how they've sabotaged the enemy ship or whatnot through basic rolls. Or if you really want to, you can get yourself in there as the PCs and actually do like full on boarding combat. And basically have a little side game where maybe you play a round or two and then a round of Starship Combat and a round or two of Tactical Combat and go back and forth to keep the drama, keep the tension.
I want to see a game where the PCs have a boarding pod and they're fighting enemies with boarding pods on their ships. So they go onto their ship, they jet off and board somebody else's ship, and then they take their ship and board somebody else's ship, and they're just bouncing around the battlefield ship to ship, fighting all the fights inside everybody's starships.
Well, you don't just have to use those breaching pods either. You can also just ram the other ship, right? So put a ram weapon on your ship, run your whole starship into theirs, and then while you're, you know, so closely connected, you can send, you know, jetpackers or something onto their ship to go in and invade and get in. So
I love it.
Yeah, bunch of options.
Moving on to critical effects.
This section, I don't think we should talk too much in it. The thing I want to say is that this section is so good it should be in the core rulebook. Like, it's great. the concept that the actions that all the different crew actions from the core rulebook have like things that happen better when they critically hit is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I love this section, and I feel like this book makes this entire book is great, obviously, but this section of chapter 2 makes this book, like, in my opinion, mandatory for starships, because the critical effects are just so, it's not even that they're powerful, it's that they make your decisions in Starship Combat matter that much more.
You know, like, oh, I critically hit. That's something so cool. I rolled so well that now all of a sudden everybody on my team is like completely roused by my great speech, or, you know, anything like that. This is a great section and you should read this section.
Well, one of the things that was fun about it, I did a lot of the heavy lifting on the section, by the way. But one of the things that's really fun is that a big critique of the Starship combat as it appears in the core rulebook is that it's fantastic if you're the pilot, it's good if you're the gunner, and everyone else is like, how can I help you, I guess? But even just taking your action that you would do, because there's all sorts of things in here that you're like, I have to roll a 3 or better and I succeed. But now if you roll that 20, you're like, oh no, I didn't just, you know... I didn't just balance the shields. I also was able to increase our total shield points and actually regenerate some off of it while I was at it because I was so good at it. I didn't just, you know, scan the enemy ship well. Ooh, boring. But I also, the next time your Starship's weapons deals damage, there's a 25% chance to do crit damage. You scanned it so well, you found a vulnerability. Like, it's great stuff. And it really makes those mundane actions seem exciting.
Yes,
it is great stuff. I think it is well written and well conceived. I don't think it belongs in the core rulebook, honestly. And I'll tell you why I don't think it belongs in the core rulebook, because this speaks to game design. Starfinder is obviously iterated from Pathfinder. And one of the things that is the most different is Starship combat. I mean, it uses a different map style, different action styles, etc. When we were putting out that book, we only had so much time to design and playtest those rules. And people only have so much time that they can absorb them. And it's a whole new subsystem. So by the time you're looking at adding stuff like this, I think it is much better to add these things in a book that expands everything and be able to say, hey, we have a few years of experience with the system now. We know better what will and won't unbalance it. We know what people find exciting, what they find boring. So you get a better version of this that now, I mean, from now on, from now till forever, anyone playing Starfinder has this option. So it's only those first few years that you couldn't do this. But yeah, you get a better end result by looking at what the actual play environment has created and being able to say, this is how we make this better.
Maybe. I think I'm going to agree with Alex on this one, actually, because I do feel, and I feel pretty strongly about how I've even told people at this table, Starship combat is all about your piloting check. Gunnery checks are important too, but that piloting check to win initiative essentially during the movement phase is paramount. And what you do during the pilot phase is paramount, which makes that job the most important job on the Starship. Adding something like this in diminishes that. I don't think it makes it not the most important job anymore. I still have that opinion. But it makes the other jobs seem less insignificant compared to the pilot, so I think it could be in there. It's only two pages.
My point is that none of the playtest feedback we originally got was that piloting is the most important job.
But
that was not an opinion that any of the playtesters or anyone in the company had when we were designing it. So we couldn't try and fix it. We hadn't identified it as a problem.
I understand that. It's not an attack on you, Owen. It's just that's how it turned out. And as we learned this, we went, we need something like this. So with the 2020 hindsight, I'd say this is one of those things that would like fit well into the core rulebook and not seem out of place. And probably better than a couple pages of world lore that was expounded upon almost immediately in the next book that was published. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, that world lore was, in my opinion, crucial. But
I mean, it's crucial, but I don't know. It's one of those things that other books came out almost immediately that had that information and more. And so it was like, we probably could have lived without it, but...
Hey, now, let's be fair. This is Starship combat, not host combat.
Let's move
on to the next section.
The next section is Starship Chases. And they handle Starship Chases. I actually don't personally want to go deep dive on this other than it's a Starship Chase system. It's got environmental effects and how to design Starship Chase and scale check DCs. Does anyone have anything really super special and specific they want to call out on that section?
No, but chases are cool.
I think it's cool.
Oh, yeah, I'm glad it's in here. It gives you extra options for telling stories, so that's good.
No, I think it's great to have it. I just, once we've told people it's there and it's good, I don't know that we need to spend a whole lot of time focusing on it.
Yeah, there's a lot of other things, too.
That brings us to additional Starship options.
Mm-hmm.
This has things like orbital drops and Starship locations and personal drop pods and It's just a whole bunch of cool stuff you can use when talking about starships and running starship games and designing starship encounters. Mm. I am personally pleased, for example, that there is now a list of starship combat scale that offers some scales for what is a hex in starship combat. Mm-hmm. Because if people were asking about boarding and ramming 1.5 minutes after the book came out, how big is a starship hex? They were asking 2 minutes after it came out. So I think this is a good answer to that question. And I think it is important to be able to tell people something like, hey, at standard scale, a hex is 10 miles. So unless your starship is more than 10 miles long, it doesn't fill more than a hex.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I think this is cool too, because then you can do something like say, hey, we're going to do close combat near like a super colossal. And now the super colossal can take up multiple hexes as a set piece on your battle mat, even if the let's say the fighters that the PCs are maneuvering around in, some medium-sized starship, for example, doesn't interact directly with it, right? And then you have this Death Star situation of like, yes, it's there and it's big and we're aware of it, but we're dealing with all these fighters and turrets and orbital guns and things.
Yes.
So what else is in the additional starship options section that you two are enamored of?
Honestly, I just like all the different variety it gives for storytelling. There's just a lot of things in here that sort of help you if you didn't know how to express it in game terms, gives it to you, or gives you ideas to go, oh, you know, there's stuff about drop pods in here. I'm going to do drop pods in the next adventure that I'm running, you know?
I think that this section is important because it gives a lot of context to how starships work and different things that you can do with starships from a storytelling perspective. I don't think that this is a section that really changes combat all that much. And I would argue about whether or not this should be in chapter two or somewhere else in the book, because a lot of it is really kind of flavor dressing, and that's not bad. I love flavor. Flavor is great. It's why you eat. But, things like the hull ruptures, it's like, it doesn't really tell you, like, there are no rules for like when a hull rupture occurs. It's just like, oh, you took damage and you want to say your hull is ruptured? This is what happens. And it just, to me, it feels like a layer of storytelling that you would put into combat. The way that, like, if someone stabbed you with a sword, you might go, you know, your blood oozes out of your chest. And, you know, it gives you that sort of context on what happens in starship combat. I think that is important.
Absolutely.
I agree with both of you. Okay, that brings us to starships in atmosphere, which I actually hadn't seen a lot of demand for from the fan base in general, but that may be because we've sort of been when I was there, we were sort of avoiding doing a lot of interaction between starships and atmospheres. The part I like about this the most, in addition to talking about atmospheric friction, is that it talks about hazards for being in an atmosphere, electric storms and ice storms and toxic atmospheres. And I think, again, that allows for some really cool storytelling and changing up what you're dealing with issues for a GM and for adventure writers. And I am always in favor of having, here's a baseline, players can be familiar with it, but this is how we can change things up so that not every encounter is, oh, you run into a random pirate who will shoot at you. We can do other things within the starship setting.
I didn't know this when I was writing this section, but I did mention this when Vanessa and I chatted with John during Behind the Pages, where like I had received this section during our initial planning. And I guess like Thurston Hillman, the Starfinder Society developer, requested this because he wanted to tell these kinds of stories in Starfinder Society and couldn't. So when I was told that it was Thurston who wanted this, like I reached out. I was like, hey, I heard you wanted this section. I'm assigned to it. Is there anything that you want? And he goes, and I'm going to impersonate Vanessa here. He goes, don't mess this up, Agunis. And I'm like, oh, no. Yeah, so I worked really hard on this one. I spent a lot of time researching about like what happens to planes and like real world shuttles when they start going through atmosphere. My favorite part about this section is I sat down and I figured out the safe speed about like
when you start going too quickly, your hull will just start falling apart because the friction from the air molecules in the atmosphere you're going through will just start ripping things apart. And so, like, if you're trying to, and to me, it's just so funny because it explains why colossal starships never actually land on planets, mm-hmm. because the amount that they can move at a time and yeah. not take damage is just so slow. Like, I had a lot of fun with the friction multiplier and figuring out, like, okay, well, this is how we can simulate the difference between trying to fly through, you know, Castrovel and how to fly through, oh gosh, I'm going to mess up the name of the planet. Idaria? No, the gas giant with all the cool rings.
Rathena?
That one. Yeah. I'm so glad you're hero and you saved me.
I think it's a cool section, and I think it's going to add a lot to what people can do with starships.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of what people can do with starships, we promised we'd get to it. We're here now. Vanessa, do you have any thoughts on Squadron Combat?
I have so many thoughts on Squadron Combat. This is the part of the book that I'm just like, yes, I want to play Wing Commander, okay? I want to play, like, that X-Wing squad. I want to do that in Starfinder with this.
The real question is, do you want to form Voltron?
I mean, it's our
No.
I'm just kidding. I know you have the unification matrix where you can form Voltron. Anime wasn't really my thing growing up, but Wing Commander definitely was. We played a lot of that, a lot of those X-Wing games, TIE Fighter, like space, basically space flight simulators was like one of the types of games I grew up on, and I just freaking love them. So the idea that I can play a game that, even though it's like a battle grid, not first person, fine, where we're just like a squad of ships that's going out from our carrier on different missions, and then, you know, we're messing around the mess hall in between and fun roleplay moments, and you can be like, no, Maverick, Iceman's dead, whatever, is just super fun to me.
There are entire genres of space storytelling that sort of depend on these rules existing, right? You can't do Rogue Squadron or Wraith Squadron or Battlestar Galactica or Wing Commander or mid to later Honor Harrington books. There's just a whole slew of things that require you to be able to have squadron combat.
Mm-hmm.
I know why it isn't in the core rulebook. This is actually one of the things that I would have liked to see in the core rulebook, but then the question becomes, what 8 pages would we have cut to cram it in there, because that book was already bursting at the seams. But mm-hmm. I think it's a super important addition. And the reason it didn't show up before now was that there was a strong thought that it needed enough time and experienced writers who had proven that they understood starship combat and the Starfinder universe. And that was in order for it to exist. So I'm super happy with it. I'm super glad it's there. I haven't actually used it yet, which is a little weird for me. But I'm looking forward to playing with some squadron combat ideas and possibly even building some campaigns around playing a squadron, because I think that's one of the most appealing whole new kinds of Starfinder campaign that this book makes possible.
I know, who doesn't want to, like, strafe a way bigger ship shooting a bunch of, you know, proton torpedoes at it or something? Like, oh my gosh, this is just so much fun.
Owen, it makes sense that you haven't gotten to play with this yet. You're a civilian now, like us.
I, as far as Paizo's concerned, I'm a civilian. It's very, very true. But I mean, coming in, if I want to look at this as a freelancer or a third party publisher or a third party writer, this is also a place where I think we have just opened up a rich new territory for people who want to do Starfinder compatible content, right? Like, right now, I hope someone's saying, hey, I'm going to write a 16-page squadron adventure for these rules so I can introduce them and people can get used to them and maybe you can kick off a whole game. I think that would be an awesome third-party product to run off these.
Gosh, I just love everything about them. I think
that would be awesome for some third-party, as if there wasn't, say, another third-party publisher here who could hire someone to do
that. I don't know what you mean. There's no third-party publishers here. There's just us foxes.
Right.
I don't know any third-party publishers at all.
No.
Hey, let's talk about other ways that Starship Combat gets completely reframed using this section, which is the Armada Combat rules.
What? Armada combat?
Yeah. I think we can just summarize this very quickly, that it's mass combat
army style
in space
for starships. Yeah,
in mass space. Combat in space.
I like how all the roles basically say you're not just the chief mate, you're in charge of all of the chief mates on all the starships. So like I'm just picturing like this entire like army of like buff dudes who look like the Shunta Vanguard just going ha, ha 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 ha, and like you're going quickly, everyone go to your starship's access hatch and rip it up and manually change your starship's trajectory. Yes sir, yes sir, yes sir. It's great. I love this section just because of like this feels like what you could be like what you could kind of have just like the culmination of like your character, like you've gotten all of your friends and allies together and now you're working together to take down the big bad, maybe the devastation arc, huh? I don't know, maybe. And you're just going for it. I love it. It's mm-hmm. so cool. I like mass combat and I like team building.
Yeah, I think this is a good place for it too in this book.
Sorry, what, Vanessa?
I was going to say, I think this is a good place to put this sort of rules is in this book as we're sort of expanding what Starship Combat means, what scale we're telling these stories on. So we just talked about mm-hmm. Squadron Combat where we're shrinking the scale down a bit. And this is more of, you know, the big, hey, we're you're playing Princess Leia in this battle. You know, you're telling everyone where to go. And that is an important part of telling different stories as well.
Mm-hmm. I am sad that I did a character line search for It's a Trap and it's nowhere in this book. So I obviously would have made sure that sentence was in there somewhere, but would have been wrong of me because that's an Easter egg, but I'd have done it anyway. What I really like about having both Squad Combat and Armada Combat is, again, there are kinds of stories that really require Armada Combat to be able to tell, and sometimes they are the same stories. Mm. I think it'd be super cool for someone to put together a campaign where, hey, we're going to have some squad combats, and then you may do a squad combat that helps determine the build points of the two armadas, because if you win, you've gotten the Death Star plans, whatever, right? You have successfully done some tactical level thing, and then that will impact the strategic level thing, which we will have when we have all of these starships show up, or, you know, the entire ragtag fleet from Battlestar Galactica, whatever. So we can do all those different scales of things in one campaign with one game system. So I think it's super cool in that regard.
Mm. Oh yeah, absolutely.
I also kind of want to see it get slightly reskinned for mass combat for things other than starships.
Mm.
But I don't know if, I literally do not know if that's something Paizo's looking at. And if not, it's something that shouldn't be too hard for someone to kit bash if they wanted to do it themselves.
Like ground troops and hover tanks and things like that. Right. Yeah, that'd be fun. That'd be pretty cool. All right, should we move on to chapter 3?
Yes, we really should. Starships.
I know, we're at time, but that's okay. We're going to plow right on. Starships. This is a fun chapter that introduces a lot of neat ideas. Talks about the different manufacturers, gives them a logo, gives them a quick description of what this manufacturer does, where they came from, what sort of benefits might you get from that manufacturer, the types of ships they build. And it really helps for, I think, for home GMs who are like, you know what, I need more Blackwind Engineering ships, but there is a limited amount available to me. What are they like? Who are these people? I need to make more because, you know, there's a conspiracy or whatever reason.
I don't want to go through point all by point for all sorts of reasons, but I love that we get the name, some background, their logo, their specialties, their famous models. That is great storytelling material, and I think it's super useful for GMs. I also think it's useful for players. If they want to say, hey, my goal as a character is someday be able to afford a Redshift Revolution Skyhook Serenade, right? That gives you that in-character hook. So you're not saying I want a Starfinder Maserati, whatever the equivalent of a Maserati is.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. The big section, and it's really cool, and I don't want to do it short shrift, but the main thing is that it's here, and it's big, and it's cool, and it's got lots of neat graphics.
Yeah, so many starships all the way from tier 1/3 to tier 20, filling in a bunch of gaps. And always remember, you can reskin a starship if you need to. If you're like, hey, mm-hmm. I don't want this particular tier 19 ship, but I need a tier 19 ship that sort of works like this, great. Just pull out the stat block, reskin a couple things, and you're golden.
And for fans of the starfaring whales, the Olma, one of the starships is a whale that it's been outfitted with essentially starship battle armor that you live in. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's great.
Obviously, you want the Starship Operations Manual to have a bunch of starships in it, and it does. Mm-hmm. And they're given not just the stats and not just a cool piece of art, although they have that. They also have lots of cool information on each individual starship model. And they look very, very different. I like things like the biomechanical shuttles and such.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's cool for me just to see, here's an illustration of how different groups do things differently in Starfinder. That it's not just there are five kinds of starship that we had in the core rulebook. There's a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, there's just so many ships out there and that can incorporate these new rules and such. It's fantastic. I will say building starships is actually one of my favorite things to do. I am the person in all those video games where you get to like customize your car, or customize your bike, or customize whatever it is. I love that part of the game. I just drool for it. And so coming up with things like, this is my starship, and this is the design, and this is why this has this gun in this place, and this is why it's this way, it's just so much fun for me. So reading through this section is just like, oh, this is so cool.
Jeez.
And that brings us to chapter 4, Running Starship Campaigns, mm-hmm. which talks about things like building starship scale creatures. I'm so glad that this exists now. We've had starship scale creatures show up in the various Aliens books, but there really wasn't a lot of guidance on how to make one. And so this talks about the base stats and what type it is. You can have an undead starship scale creature or a giant vermin. So you can have a 100-mile-long space tick if you want, or an ooze or an outsider. It's got everything you would need to create things that people interact with at a starship scale, including a list of published starship creatures, which I think is really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
There's a planet-sized Aeon, and that's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know.
It presents some new, yeah, there is a planet-sized Aeon, which is, in my opinion, creepy, but that's fine. And it has some new monsters. That brings us to space hazards, which
you've got Data behind you.
Well, I was going to say, spreadsheets. I was going to say the starship scale creatures was a section I wrote, and the original math behind it was insurmountable, so I just thought I would share some of that with you. It was a lot of math. So when you look at it and you're like, I don't know, like, no, we math all this stuff out as designers. It is a big deal to us to get it right. And I just, I don't know, I wanted to share that, I guess, show off a little, I must admit.
I have, part of the problem is that the game was not designed from the ground up thinking, you know what, we should make sure we have rules to do. We should make sure we have rules to do starship scale creatures. That's something that came along. We were like, oh, we've got starships. We've got giant creatures. We ought to have some way for them to intersect. Mm-hmm. So it was generated very ad hoc. And I've been one of the people that has to come along and say, okay, can these ad hoc rules be turned into an actual mathematical basis for getting it right? Yes. And it's not easy. And I'm very impressed with your work on that.
Oh, thanks. I did a lot of like trending averages and things like that to try to figure out like what's a baseline. And then a lot of the templates and things are able to push you above the baseline and below the baseline, depending on what you're going for, which then creates sort of this pathway of here's the range that's acceptable within a specific tier. And then you can create giant starship scale creatures like this planet-sized Aeon that is horrifying.
It really is.
Yeah, good stuff. But speaking of stuff that isn't horrifying, the last couple sections of the book do a really good job of trying to help player GMs come up with entire campaign story arcs and adventures that are seated around starships.
Yeah, we talk about different space hazards. Make a starship combat more than just there's a ship in space and another ship in space. Roll initiative.
You know? It's an asteroid. The asteroid is filled with space bees, and the bees are actually magma.
enjoy.
Right. I mean, but yeah, we talk about different types of debris, but also radiation, gravity fields, combining effects into something. So you're like, all right, so there's this secret base near a pulsar. Wait, what? Yeah, you need to fly near the pulsar, destroy the orbital cannons that are around it, and land on this thing. But it's a pulsar.
It has the almost traditional adventure seeds, which I think is really great for getting ideas into GMs. But it also has a section on Starship campaign arcs. And I really appreciate that because I think it's a different kind of information for how to make Starship, at least some of the times, the focus of an adventure and a plot arc. And I think that's a really useful tool, isn't exactly the right word, a really useful discussion of these ideas to help some GMs who might be stuck trying to figure out how to make people that want starships to be more important, an important part of a campaign.
Mm. And the cool thing is that the arcs are all like different types of stories. Like you have one that's like, hey, you're Donna, you have a rusty old starship. Here are different ways that your story might involve improving that starship. Oh no, there's aliens coming and you want to do the combat side of starships. Here's all the combat ideas. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Sometimes it makes you wonder if poor Jason or Jake Tondro is like using up all of his good adventure path ideas, and then you like to follow him on Twitter and you're like, no, he's got plenty more.
He's got plenty.
I would honestly like to see more role-playing game books have sections like this for any theme, right? Mm-hmm. So if we have a book on magic, I would love to see a list of, hey, here are how you do magic campaign arcs, or a book on the wilderness. Here are wilderness campaign arcs. I think it's a great way to inspire GMs and players to take this rule set and do something new with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It sort of ties all these options together. Appendices. Yeah. Very important appendices. Yes,
it does.
Yeah.
And we've got a starship character sheet, and we have, I think very importantly, a squadron roster and an armada fleet sheet. So if you're using those rules, there's support for them. Yes. And that's the book, folks. I am really, really impressed with this book. I think it could have been kind of slapdash, and the John Compton in particular, and all the freelancers, you two included, did a lot of work to make this a really integral linchpin of the game going forward, so that if someone wants to know how do I make starships more interesting or more important or more variable, this is the go-to book resource for that. And I think that's super cool.
Well, my favorite part was not just to see, you know, your own stuff in print and what survived development and how it changed, which is always fun, but to see what all these other authors came up with for it and how they really fleshed this book out. I love all of the advice sections. I like the company sections that talk about the different manufacturers, and oh my gosh, the gazillion pages of new starships with beautiful new art. Like it's all just such fantastic stuff. It makes me want to play a starship campaign. So, I'm like, who's running me a squad game? I will sign up. I want to play in my squad game.
So, final thoughts on the Starship Operation Manual.
It is...
Alex, have a final thought.
It is by far essential. I think together the two operations manuals make up what is essentially the Advanced Player's Guide of Starfinder. I think that, you know, when you look at a book the size of a typical Advanced Player's Guide and you compare it to the size of a Starfinder book, that's sort of, to me, what it feels like. It feels like the character operations manual is for the typical characters, the ones who are getting class levels, they're running around, they're doing the adventures. And then the Starship Operations Manual is the half of the Advanced Player's Guide that is devoted to that other character that you bring along with you, your starship. Because in Starfinder, the starship really is a character of on its own, to the point where there's an iconic starship in the Starfinder role-playing game.
Sure.
So I think that this book was necessary following the character operations manual. Mm-hmm. And I think that together they managed to be a very strong pairing.
Vanessa, you got final thoughts?
It's the kind of book that makes me want to go play the game. And I think that speaks a lot to the book itself. Reading through this book, I want to play a starship heavy campaign. And I think before that was out, that might have been a rare statement to hear. But looking through all the different things I can do, I am excited to get in that spaceship and fly around and, you know, blow up bad guys or drones or whatever we're blowing up today. I think it's fantastic.
Okay. That largely wraps up our breakdown. Let's very, very briefly talk about the most important other Starfinder news that has come out. I was not paying as much attention during Gen Con because I had other things going on, but I know that you two both were. What would you say were the big pieces of news for Starfinder from Gen Con?
I think the big one is talking about tech revolution and looking at the new nanosite playtest for the new class. Also looking at the mech rules and the playtest for that. And I think everyone talking about what is this going to turn into, right? What do I want for mech rules? What do you want? How do we make it all work? And I think that conversation really permeated a lot of Gen Con and a lot of the news stuff that we heard about. It was a lot of talk about that. What else might be in that book? There were a lot of hints given out by Paizo staffers about like, oh, you're looking for rules that do that, huh? Check out Tech Revolution. So I think that's going to be the next big space that we can see a lot more of the game world and the game rules being fleshed out.
I think that I mean, it's not really Gen Con news, but it's news since the last time we've done this show. The nanosite class went from being a this is coming to it's here. So you can take part in the nanosite and mech playtest right now. The nanosite is pretty cool. It is a very in the traditional Starfinder sense, it manages to be a class that looks like nothing we've ever seen in Pathfinder. It is a class that is very strongly built around, I'm going to call it Big Hero 6 because it reminds me of the bad guy in Big Hero 6 where you have the little microbots and they swarm around you and do stuff. And I'm all here for that. That's super cool. So I'm watching with a lot of interest as this new class grows and evolves.
And I think we definitely should talk about the playtest. And I presume we will want to talk about the playtest in greater detail on another show and our thoughts about it. But the fact that it exists and it's a thing and you can go do it, that's worth mentioning.
I'm thinking, wouldn't it be really cool if we managed to, like, you know, reach out and maybe, like, get somebody who might be on the inside to grab maybe someone we haven't seen on the show before and bring them on to talk about, maybe since the next episode will be, I don't know, like September or something, maybe like information they learned from doing the playtest. That'd be a real theoretical cool episode, wouldn't it?
I agree that in the entirely theoretical, that sounds like a cool episode. I will also, in the category of things that weren't actually Gen Con news but have come out since our last show, there are now full episodes of the Alexa Play Starfinder game out there, and we have discovered that two of the voice actors were Nathan Fillion and Laura Bailey, and a lot of people consider those to be pretty big deal. The first three episodes are currently available. There will be more, and I have not yet had a chance to play these, although I played the short preview thing beforehand. So this is a new way to interact with Starfinder as a universe, and I'm looking forward to giving it a try.
Yeah, I think it's going to be cool.
All right. So fun question. If you don't know who some of these people are, I know Laura Bailey personally because she's the voice actress of Jaina Proudmoore from World of Warcraft. Yeah. So I'm not sure, but I'm like 90% certain that she sings Daughter of the Sea too, Owen, from that. Like, I think that's her. So,
well, we ought to be able to look that up.
Yeah, I should.
In any case,
there's this thing.
So I'm really excited.
We can do that for another show since we are already way over time.
Wait, who's Nathan Fillion? Why do I know that name? I'm just kidding. I'm super kidding. Nathan Fillion of all the fame forever. I know. Just seeing the shocked look on your faces was beautiful. All right. Brown coats forever. All right.
We played into your hands.
You sure did.
Yeah. Okay, folks.
She was.
That's our show. I very much want to thank Vanessa and Alex for their wonderful insights, and in this case, their wonderful work on the project. And we'll be back in September to have another big helping of No Direction Beyond. And remember, go beyond with No Direction Beyond.